Suppose you're looking out the window and you see the publisher's clearinghouse truck pull up in front of your house, and they're walking up to the door. Now, come on, you've thought about this. You know you've thought about this. And they come in, so, you know, what are you going to do? How are you going to treat those people? Or suppose it's the President of the United States who comes to your home and comes on inside. What would you do? Or if it's a favorite movie star or musician to your house, what would you do? Or some A-list celebrity, Steven Spielberg or Michael Jordan or Bill Gates or Oprah Winfrey, to your house, what would you do? What would you do if Jesus Christ came to your home? Well, here's what happened at the home of Martha and Mary, according to Luke 10. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," Jesus, the Lord, answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Martha has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." This is a classic story of two different personalities in the same place at the same time with very different responses. So let's think of it like a case study and review the case. Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem. He stopped at the home of Martha, and her younger sister Mary lived there with her. They, we know from another biography of Jesus, had a brother named Lazarus, and they lived in a little village called Bethany, which was about 2 miles outside of the city of Jerusalem. Hospitality in those days was, like today, very important, but more important, because they didn't have hotels and motels, they didn't have fast food restaurants and things like that. So staying at somebody's home was often the only alternative. Inns were infrequent and often unsafe, and it was a blessing to Jesus that Martha would open her home to him. Now, Martha and Mary were disciples of Jesus, close followers. So they cared about him, they loved him, and it was an honor to them to have Jesus come to their house, and they wanted to give to Jesus the very best. Because it was Martha's house, and because of the way Martha was wired, she went, well, overboard in preparation. We don't know exactly what she did, but it's not hard to guess that she received very short notice that Jesus was coming down the road and would be there. She hurried to straighten things up, to clean things up, to clean things that Jesus would probably never see, to send out for food, to start preparations for the meal, to bring out her best recipes. She wanted things to be as perfect could be. Now, I have an assumption here. I assume that Mary helped. And I also assume that Martha spent some time with Jesus. But Martha and Mary quickly focused in different directions. Martha became focused on the preparations, on the housework, on the meal, and didn't have any more time for Jesus. And Mary became focused on Jesus and didn't have any more time to help. Now, at first, neither one noticed what the other was doing because they were both doing what they do, who they were, until Martha suddenly stopped and became upset when she realized she was doing everything. Mary had stopped working. Has that ever happened to you? You know, you're in a situation where you suddenly stop and say, "Wow, I'm doing it all. I thought this was a partnership. I thought we were on a team, and I'm doing 90% of the work. I thought we were going to share expenses, and it's all my money that's doing everything that's being done." It's a common thing to happen. And it's a common thing in a situation like that to blame someone else, and whoever's closest gets the blame. And closest to Martha was Jesus. So instead of taking responsibility for herself, she laid the responsibility on him, saying, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Now, you've been there too. I certainly have. I have people who say to me, tell the other person, the third party, what they're supposed to do. Fix them. Get the church to fix them. Straighten things out. That's the case. Pretty simple, really. Jesus came. Martha became distracted by her tasks. She complained to Jesus and asked Jesus to fix the situation. Now, in medicine or in counseling, this is called the presenting problem. And it may or may not have anything to do with the actual or the underlying issue. Jesus was a brilliant diagnostician, insightful, understanding, clever. And so he diagnosed and said, Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Probably we don't fully understand all that Jesus meant by this statement. It may have been, at least at first, simply understood to refer to the meal. You're upset and worried about many things. Look, you've prepared a whole smorgasbord. Well, they wouldn't have called it a smorgasbord, but a buffet or whatever. All this food, and Jesus is saying, all I needed was a sandwich. It doesn't even need 2 pieces of bread. One piece of bread on the bottom and cheese on the top, that would be sufficient. I'm not all that hungry. But what are you doing here? You're driven, Martha, more by your need to do something than my need to have something done. Several years ago, Charlene and I were invited to a home here in the metropolitan area, and we were told to arrive around 8 o'clock at night. So we assumed that that meant no food and went out for, I think it was pizza, on our way over to their house. Got there, lovely home, invited into the living room, and they had some hors d'oeuvres, some really good crackers and beverages. I really wasn't hungry at all, but, you know, you got to be courteous, and the crackers were really good. So I kind of actually ate too many of the crackers under all the circumstances. And then about a half an hour, 45 minutes later, going on 9 o'clock, they said, well, let's go into the dining room, which seemed like a strange thing to say. And we go into the dining room, and there is this elaborate spread, linen tablecloth, china, crystal, and a full-course meal. And I looked over to Charlene and thought, you know, what are you going to do about this? I mean, and what do you say in a situation like this? We already ate? Sorry, full of pizza, can't eat your stuff. What do you say? I thought I was going to get sick at the table, and I ate it. I don't know how I ate it, but I ate it. I wish I had thought of Jesus' line where he said, you prepared many things, but one thing was needed. That was a cracker. I needed one cracker, not a whole meal. But the amount of food, hey, that wasn't what was really important. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that Martha was upset and distracted and angry over something that she didn't need to be worried about. And it's a common problem. There are millions of Marthas in our world today. In fact, quite a few probably here this morning. We're the people who are inclined to worry and to get upset and then too often find a reason to be worried and to be upset and then to blame other people. We somehow assume it's not about us, it's about the circumstances around us. That somebody else has to do something. Now, you know, I've read this story lots of times, and I've heard people talk about it, and I've read what authors have written about it. And I'll tell you that the spin on it most of the time is that Martha was the bad guy, and Mary was the good guy. And when it's really blatant, it usually comes out with some statement like, Mary really loved Jesus. And Martha loved the kitchen. I mean, what kind of a comparison is that? And I want to give her a break, partially because I like Martha. I think I'm like Martha. And if I were in the story, I'd have been in the kitchen. I'd have been in the kitchen helping Martha and probably trying to help her figure out how to confront Jesus about straightening the situation out. So it seems to me that Martha was, in fact, a good person. She meant well. She was trying her best, but she had a problem. She really did have a problem. And Jesus had a diagnosis. that she needed to hear, whether she wanted to hear it or not. But in typical Jesus fashion, he doesn't just diagnose someone's problem, he offers a solution, a prescription. In this case, a triple dose prescription. The first dose was for her to experience the compassion of Jesus. He looked her in the eye and he spoke to her not in a manner that was condescending, not that was severe or really all that confrontational. He simply said, "Martha, Martha." You know, the Bible seems like a long book when you consider the subject and the time that it covers. It's really amazingly condensed. And so the words had to be carefully selected. Repetition that's unnecessary had to be excluded. So it has to be a reason that Martha's name is twice written. It's because it was twice spoken. And you can almost off the page sense Jesus' warmth, his care, his kindness, his grace, his generosity. I think here he gives to us all a lesson about criticism. I've never met anyone who liked to be criticized. I would be concerned about somebody who liked to be criticized. Not only do we not like criticism, we do criticize, but most of us aren't very good at it. It's not a skill that we learn or something that we do well. Over the years, like you, I've received my share of criticism and deserve much, probably most, of the criticism I've received. The other part of it is I deal with people. Whenever you deal with people, you just get criticism. But I've learned that there are some people who, when they criticize me, this is the way they say my name. They're in my face. There's an animosity or an anger or hostility or a conflict that's just sort of built in. And that even when they're right, even when they're 100% right, my response that I'm not proud of is to be defensive, is to be self-justifying, self-vindicating, often to go on the attack and somehow defend myself, even though the criticism was just, by turning it and criticizing the other person. But by contrast, I find that there are those who take a different approach, who say my name differently. There's a kindness, a concern, a compassion about them, that they want to help. And while I still may become defensive, the truth is that that's the way Jesus criticized his friend, saying, "Martha, Martha." So whether your problem is worry or anger or distraction or upset or something else, I recommend taking the first dose that Jesus prescribed for Martha, and that is to hear and to receive and to experience the compassion of Jesus, that Jesus, the Son of God, comes to you with love and concern and care and with outrageous grace. He speaks your name. He knows who you are. Not that he will overlook or ignore problems, because he doesn't. He is very direct about that, but he will always treat you with compassion. Accept that compassion. But there is a second dose that must also be taken. For Martha, it was to understand the problem. Jesus, direct and simple, said, "Martha, you are worried and upset about many things." She was fragmented. Martha was divided. She had lost focus in her life. She didn't have integration to who she was. And as a result, she was overwhelmed by what was happening and overwhelmed by all that she had to do. Her problem is a very common modern American problem. We stress ourselves out, bring it upon ourselves. We imagine all the tasks to be accomplished until we write a mental catalog that far exceeds the number of hours in any week or month. And we build up almost like volcanoes, ready to erupt, and then it takes only one more degree Fahrenheit to send the eruption off. And the cause of that last degree may, in fact, be inconsequential. And we blow up, we blast at those who are closest to us, sometimes those that are most important to us. It is a common thing. In Martha's case, it was Jesus that she lashed out at. There was an interesting article in last week's Minneapolis Star Tribune not actually in the newspaper itself last Sunday, but in the USA Today magazine insert in the paper, an article by Wayne Muller in which he describes the modern Martha syndrome. He says that as the founder of a public charity, I get to visit the offices of wealthy donors, crowded social service agencies, and the small homes of the poorest families. Remarkably, within this mosaic, there is a universal refrain. I am so busy. I speak with people in business and education, doctors and daycare workers, shopkeepers and social workers, parents and teachers, nurses and lawyers, students and therapists, community activists and cooks, like Martha. The more our life speeds up, the more we feel weary, overwhelmed, and lost. Despite our good hearts and equally good intentions, our life and work rarely feel light, pleasant, or healing. Instead, as it all piles endlessly upon itself, the whole experience of being alive begins to melt into one enormous obligation. It becomes the standard greeting everywhere. I am so busy. We say this to one another with no small degree of pride, as if our exhaustion were a trophy, as if our ability to withstand stress a mark of real character. The busier we are, the more important we seem to ourselves and we imagine to others. To be unavailable to our friends and family, to be unable to find time for the sunset or even to know that the sun has set at all, to whiz through our obligations without time for a single mindful breath. This has become the model of successful life. And then he adds, because we do not rest, we lose our way. We miss the compass points that show us where to go. That was Martha. And that's many of us. And Martha, she didn't know that she had a problem. She thought Mary had a problem. She thought that Jesus had a problem. She thought if she did have a problem, her problem was that they didn't do what they were supposed to do. But Martha needed to understand what her problem was and admit to her need that she was too busy. She was too distracted. She was too worried. The problem was in her, not in others. Now, that's not to say that other people do not misbehave. It is not to say that other people fail to carry their end of the bargain. It is not to say that difficulties that we have in life can be brought upon by other people. But it is to say that we need to understand our own problems and admit to it. That was Jesus' prescription for Martha, and that's Jesus' prescription for us. The third dose of his prescription for Martha was to put first things first. He said, Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. So Jesus explained that there was one necessary priority, and that Mary had chosen it, and Martha should do the same thing. And the one priority was Jesus. Mary that day, I think, had been involved in preparation and work. She had done her part. Then she stopped. She quit. She shut up. She sat at Jesus' feet. She listened. She relaxed. She rested. She refocused. She gained a center to her life that then organized everything else in her life. She gained a purpose that Jesus said would not be taken away from her. Now, the same prescription applies to us. To put Jesus first. To stop what we are doing and to spend time with him. Even on the busiest of days, to just stop. At least once a day, to sit at the feet of Jesus. To read the Bible. To talk to him, to pray, to share our needs, to make him the highest priority. And to not just do it with time, but to do it with finances. Make Jesus first. With relationships, Jesus first. With career, Jesus first. And then to discover that life has a meaning, a purpose, a focus that you begin to trust him for those things that you cannot control, and you give that control to him, and that you will relax more and be happier and do what is best and what is right. Now, if you think as I think, there's a part of you that wants to scream out and say, yeah, sure. And how is the work going to get done? If everybody just stops and relaxes and prays and reads the Bible and talks to Jesus and gets focused, how is life going to go on? There are calls to return. There are appointments to make. There are meals to prepare. There are children to be put to bed. There are sales to be closed. There are all these things that have to be done. I don't have time for Jesus. I don't have time for myself. Come on, get real. Be practical. How could this be? Maybe you remember the story that is the central illustration that gave the title to Stephen Covey's best-selling book, First Things First. He tells about a colleague who put on a business seminar and had a table, I think with a skirt around it, and had various supplies underneath. And he brought out a large glass cylinder. And he said to the seminar participants, I want to fill it with large rocks. Tell me when it's full. So one by one, he brought out these large rocks, and only a few of them fit into the glass container. And the last one actually stuck out above the top, and everyone said, it's full, it's full. You couldn't possibly get another of those rocks in there. So he said, does everybody agree? It's full. Everybody agreed. So he reached under the table, and he brought out a bag of coarse gravel and poured most of the content of that bag over the rocks, and it went down around the rocks and came up all around to the top of the glass container. He said, I thought you said it was full. Is it full now? Yeah, everybody, now it's really full. So he reached again under the table and this time brought out a bag filled with fine sand and poured the fine sand over the gravel and over the rocks until the entire content of the bag almost was poured out and in the glass cylinder. And he asked again, is it full? Well, having been tricked twice, they were not going to fall for that another time, so they're a little uncertain that time whether it was full or not. So he reached underneath the table, this time brought out a large pitcher of water and began to pour until it was all poured out and the water went down around the sand and the gravel and the rocks. Finally, everyone agreed it was full, and he asked a question. And the question was, if we put in first the water and or the sand and the gravel, would we be able to put the rocks in the glass container? And the answer was obviously not. If the rocks don't go in first, they're not going to go in. If the rocks do go in first, everything else will find its place. It'll fit around the edges. It'll make it. It'll be okay. But that, of course, begs the question, what are the rocks? What's first? What's most important? And that becomes a highly personal question. What is most important in your life? Who is it? What is it? What is more important than anyone or anything else? Martha's mistake was that she put the wrong things first. And so she became distracted and upset and worried. While her sister Mary got it right, Mary chose what was better. She put Jesus first so that everything else fell in the cracks and crevices. Mary put Jesus first. And as Jesus said, that cannot be taken away from you. Now pray together. Our gracious Father, we thank you that we may be stayed upon Jehovah, that we may be centered upon Jesus Christ. The truth is that we worry too much, we're upset too often. We give all of that to you. We ask that by your Spirit, we may put first things first, and that Jesus Christ may be number one in all of our lives, praying in his name.